This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Development in sales is an essential and never-ending journey. Regardless of your tenure, your industry, or background, committing to training and development and getting the right coaching is a big part of the job and having success. We know that developing both salespeople and leaders has to include focus on both skill set and mindset. But what does that look like? Jason Grom, Vice President Field Development with Ameriprise Financial Services, is here today to discuss his own journey into sales, the personal epiphany he had about selling earlier in his career, and his expert perspectives around what continuous learning and development and coaching should look like and why. Jason is an accomplished facilitator and coach working with individuals, teams, and large groups. He's passionate and very knowledgeable about learning design, delivery, and continuous improvement at all levels of an organization. Jason, thanks so much for joining me today on Mental Selling. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me, Will.
So I wanted to begin, as I alluded to in the introduction, if you don't mind, by having you share the story of your own, what we will call your sales origin story. We talked about it before recording, and I think that transition point of how your view of selling evolved is worth sharing.
Absolutely. Thank you, Will. So it was early 2001. I was less than a year into my career after graduating from UW-Madison, and my experience with sales was minimal. I sold my performances as a member of the UW marching band and set some appointments as an intern for a financial advisor, but that was about it. While I gained a ton of confidence selling my performances as a tuba player, I didn't exude confidence setting those appointments. At Strong Investments, where I was working in April of 2001, we had a mantra of win, add value, and have fun. Guided by the overall leader, his name is Dick Strong, he would correct associates when associates would say, "I work for him." He'd say, "No, we work together for clients." And that was one of the reasons that I was introduced to this training program. I was introduced to Larry Roberts. Larry Roberts led the integrity selling course I went to in April of 2001. And I still remember to this day, he said, "Selling is identifying needs, meeting needs, building relationships, and that last piece, an honorable profession." That changed my view of selling and what was selling, where I went from this place of trying to set these appointments and not sure what I was doing. I didn't have any confidence and wondering how could I make it in this Strong Investments organization. The organization's values were aligned, and I got to go to this training program that got a chance to help me see that different light.
And I think the emphasis on the values alignment and that sort of personal shift in view of selling is important. And we're going to talk more about that in a little bit. I wanted to get into, given your role today, you're training and coaching thousands of financial advisors every year. How do you approach, and what's your personal view or philosophy on the role of mindset versus skill set, et cetera, in training and coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll take you back to my original story and experience a little bit on how I experienced it and then how I bring that to the table today. So when I was going through that program, in addition, I was working with leaders that were helping me to gain some clarity on a few things. Number one, what did I value most in the world? Having that clarity on what I valued, foundation really helped to give me that focus out of the gate saying, this is what matters most to me. And one of those actually happens to be meaningful work, but it can be a little bit different depending upon the individual. In addition, I focused on exploring my strengths, and I did use Gallup Strengths Finder. It was Clifton Strengths Finder at the time, understanding my strengths of responsibility, harmony, includer, achiever, and discipline. I started to be motivated at that point because I was aligned with my values. I was gaining that clarity in my strengths, and I was working on those strengths, things that I was somewhat naturally, but I was practicing and applying those things. All of a sudden, everything comes together, the view of selling, the view of the role that I have, my values, and then ultimately building that strength and confidence in those strengths. Now I start to get to this place of like, I can do this. I can work with clients. And even so much so that they said to me in September of 2001, how would you like to train some individuals that are starting new to the organization? So I trained my first class in September of 2001. If you think about everything I described up to this point, I didn't say anything about the knowledge or the skill components, maybe touched on a little bit in the strength space, but it was really focused on that mindset, the values, what are my strengths, and then how am I motivated? That put me in the best position to actually learn and really applies to the work that I do today in helping advisors and leaders to develop their skills.
And it really flips the, I don't know, you can think of a pyramid image, if you will, of what the foundation of training and development is. And a lot of salespeople, a lot of organizations will think of it as that, oh, it's the product knowledge. Everything cascades off of that. And what you're saying is, no, it's the opposite. That stuff is important, certainly, and you've got to get to it. You've got to be able to speak with great clarity and conviction around what you're representing. But the foundation is really your own values alignment, your motivations, your confidence, your beliefs, that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
I think what you said before about leaning into your strengths, we did an episode recently, a woman named Jacqueline Robinson, and part of that episode was all about the importance of leaning into your strengths and how that sort of helps buoy your ability to thrive in a sales role by like really getting in tune with your strengths and leaning into those things and not necessarily trying to be good at everything.
Absolutely.
And I'd love to talk more about this idea of having clarity on your own values and motivators and strengths and why that matters. How you bring that into training and development engagement and program with people and advisors, say, that you're training. How do you create that alignment of those things from the individual with the organization that they're working for to help establish that foundation that we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So it actually starts with I and my team. If we believe this is something that is important for developing others that we work with, we need to do the same thing as well. And I literally just walked out of a meeting with one of our team members who resides in our Ameriprise India team and having the same discussion. So having that sense of clarity for our values, our motivators, and our strengths within our own team is a key part of that. When you're working with people in a training program, it really depends on the length of your engagement. And I'll talk a little bit later of the different ways that we engage our advisors and leaders in learning. But when you're in a longer program, there is an opportunity to dive into this a little bit more to help them to understand more about those values, clarity in their congruence, that sales congruence, and those elements. And that's where you can really dig into it. There are times when we're just helping somebody to learn how to use a piece of technology and it's where to click and how to use step-by-step process. And we may not get into that as much, but we think about the true behavior change. It all starts with that. And that's where we try to incorporate that into the programs that we lead.
I think it's important from where you sit and what you've experienced in your career and that emphasis on the word continuous and continuous learning and development. Can you talk about or describe what you feel like good looks like in training and facilitation?
I'll talk a little bit more about some of the in the moment, in the flow of work examples later, but I like to start with the times where we have a full engagement with a group of people. As you think about starting a training engagement, and sometimes we're working with people for weeks or months or whatever the time frame is, it's a longer term program. The first and potentially most important thing beyond the mindset component that we just talked about is you've got to take the theoretical and conceptual and turn that into practical application. There's a phrase that I will figure out someday who I can give credit to for this quote, but I say it all the time. Information without application leads to frustration. It can be interesting to explore ideas, and I love to explore ideas. I read a ton of books. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I watch a lot of videos on a variety of topics. But ultimately, you have to take whatever you're going to cover and move it from the theoretical to the practical, that application that can be applied ideally immediately. I'm not talking about, hey, 6 weeks down the road, you may want to come back to this. Ultimately, coming back to the opportunity to apply it almost immediate.
Yeah, we call that phrase we use is focusing on real play versus role play. Not just like practicing a what if scenario in the classroom, but actually going out and, like you said, applying it and applying it the next day or the next week, whatever the case may be, not like when I can get around to it 6 or 8 weeks from now, right?
Absolutely. And from there, so that's the overarching view of that application component. There's a preparation component. And of course, this applies for salespeople, those that are serving clients. Preparation's a big part of what I do. When I'm running a program, I take time to learn about those that are in the program, including our coordination team. I'll ask them to pull together a profile for each of the individuals, including their pictures and some of the background that we can find online. But it doesn't end there. I do review those details before I walk into the session with a group of people. And then I ask them some questions and really opening up the engagement by asking them more about maybe their challenges or their needs or what they hope to get out of the experience. Ask them about what brought them to the program. And of course, some individuals like to be funny and say a car or a plane. That's not what I'm getting at there. I'm trying to understand more about what brought them there and what matters most to them. If you can understand that out of the gates, then you can gear what you're sharing. Even if you have a very prescriptive program you're going through, you have a lot of opportunity as a facilitator, trainer, coach to be able to adjust and adapt to the individuals in the room.
By doing that, whether it's overt, conscious, subconscious, whatever, you're modeling the behaviors that you want your financial advisors to model with your clients, right? That idea of preparation matters, understanding their wants and needs matters before jumping into anything, not making assumptions, all that, asking the right questions, right? You're modeling that in front of the room for them.
Absolutely. And when we go past that initial engagement and understanding their needs, we try to find as many opportunities as possible to create reflection and application moments. So when I'm running sessions, I don't always use the same stories, but I have some story that I like to tell, and they usually work well in certain scenarios. I love the game of golf. Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear, is the story I usually come to. And specifically, Jack Nicklaus started every season working with his PGA professional, Jack Grout, focused on fundamentals of his swing, which starts with the grip. Literally, how does he grip the club? And I share that story to highlight the importance of those fundamentals. Then I ask the group, what are the fundamentals in our business? This helps to break the ice, especially when I could be working with an advisor or a leader that's 30 years in the business. And they may walk into the session thinking, I'm not going to learn anything through this. And when they hear an example of, this is something Jack Nicklaus did, I probably should think about it as well. Of course, it also makes a connection to what actually are the sales skills that we might be focusing on if we're focusing on sales, or whatever fundamentals we might be focusing on, depending on the topic. That story helps them then make that connection to the work. And not that everybody loves golf, so I try to mix it up a bit more with different stories. I know I started out of the gate sharing that I played the tuba. That's usually somewhat interesting to people because not many people know someone that plays the tuba. But I try to mix it up a bit more, and that story has some interest to it, but then it has to still come back to something. It's not just, all right, it's story time with Jason. Here's a story. Hopefully you're entertained by it. Yes, some entertainment, but ultimately it has to come back to that application.
Yeah, there's a lot of good sports examples. I mean, you brought up Jack Nicklaus. I think we've talked before about you can use somebody like Tom Brady, who every offseason was going back with a coach and focusing on the fundamentals, the basics. And it's like, why would he do that? He's Tom Brady. But you know what? That's how somebody that's excellent in their field maintains and gets better at those things, is going back and focusing on those things. So you're right. That's a way to crystallize that for somebody that might have a 20, 25, 30 year tenure that might be skeptical. What am I going to learn in this?
Absolutely. And building on the sports connection here as well, you've got the foundation we started with, the preparation, and then helping with application to their work, helping them reflect on the connection to this, where I still have the biggest challenge, and we've made some tremendous progress, but it's that true behavior change, that skill development, that behavior change component. And as you described, the vast majority of that growth is going to happen on the job. There are still some things that people can do from a deliberate practice standpoint. And the sports analogy example would come up here as well. There's a gentleman, his name is Dr. Rick Jensen, and he is a coach on the PGA Tour, mental coach, not a swing coach, but a mental coach. And he does a lot of work with financial services. He talks about those examples where some of the greatest golfers of all time will practice some certain skills. Now, once again, the vast majority of the practice should happen on the job, and it's real play, as you describe. there's still some opportunity to spend some more time on that. And I'd even say for my preparation for the conversation today, I spent some time preparing and practicing, and it comes back to preparation, but there were some practice components to it as well. It's not the real life scenario, and that's where the best learning happens from a skill development standpoint, but it still then comes back to when you actually are on stage, do you take some time and reflect on what worked and what didn't work? And sometimes that part gets missed. So that's an area where I am very clear on what good looks like. It's still an opportunity to continue to improve in this space. And we have some things we've been doing to try to improve upon that and making some progress out of the gates. But there's a significant amount of effort tied to that skill development, that behavior change. But when that ties back to the framework that we're teaching in our classes and the best practices, and then they can evaluate how they did based upon that, it becomes powerful.
It's such a fundamental and critical component to realize that idea of behavior change doesn't happen in a classroom when you're there for whatever, 4 hours, a full day, 2 days, whatever it might be. That's an event, and that can be like the kickoff point for behavior change. But behavior change happens in the days and weeks and months afterwards through that practice, that real play versus role play, the coaching that they're getting, all those sorts of things. And whether it's you're getting training from the organization that you're with, or you're practicing self-development, we'll talk about that in a little while, it's an important aha moment to embrace, to be like, training is not a check-the-box activity. Oh, I've done this and I'm done.
One final thing I want to share on at least my perspective on what good looks like in training and facilitating and coaching is probably the most fun parts for me personally. Telling some stories and connecting with people is certainly a part of that. But when you think of the idea of significant emotional events, they just happen in our lives for the most part. So births, deaths, marriages, illness, children leaving home, those are all examples. We cannot recreate that in a classroom. And we'd actually prefer not to, especially some of those significant emotional events. We can't create those experiences, but we can elevate the experience a bit. There's a book by Chip and Dan Heath called The Power of Moments. They talk about elevation, insight, pride, and connection. And those elements, and it doesn't have to be all four of them, but the more the better, create some of those significant emotional events or elevate the experience a bit. So some of the things I do when I'm working with a group, I take a picture of the group together at the beginning. There's a sense of connection there that they were the group that started on this day, and it brings them back to the experience. Everyone seems to love that part, that they have this ongoing connection. At the end of many of the programs that I lead, I create a video montage of the experience. With technology today, we have the ability to record a lot of the things that we're doing, whether it's something that happens live or something that happens asynchronously. We can pull that together in a video, put a little music to the background, and it's fun to do. And then you break the script a little bit when you introduce it to them, because they don't expect it. They're like, all right, we're going to have another training session here. And all of a sudden, this video with high power music is in the background, and they seem to really like. The last thing I'd highlight I do that elevates the experience and gets closer to the significant emotional event, but once again, I cannot recreate all those examples I shared before, is I bring back some graduates, individuals that have gone through the program previously. And what it does is it helps bring credibility, validate the experience that they're going through. But in addition, it's a significant emotional event for that graduate, because they feel like, wow, Jason reached out to me and thinks I have something to share. And now they're teaching back to others, and they're feeling a deeper sense of connection to what we covered, even if it was 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, and maybe even much longer than that before. Those are some examples that I incorporate. I have some fun doing that. It's a little bit of my creative side that I can bring to the table, and the participants tend to like it as well.
That's an interesting thing to do with your past graduates, to bring them back. Like you said, it's a really nice byproduct of what you're doing. You're obviously bringing them in mostly for the benefit of the learners that are in the room, but it does create that reminder, that validation, that sort of connection back to what they experienced, so they can keep reinforcing those things that they might have learned, whatever it was, 6, 12, 18 months ago. I also like what you said about the emotional connection, because we talk a lot on this show about how buying is far more emotional than it is logical, and therefore selling should be emotional. And backing it up further, then the training becomes more memorable, more sticky, if you will, if there's an emotional component to that. So I think that's a really good perspective on how to create those learning experiences.
Thank you, Will.
I want to talk about your perspectives on continuous learning at work and why that matters so much. We've alluded to it somewhat, but I know there's some specific things that you have perspectives around when it comes to continuous learning and again, why that matters.
Absolutely. So everyone's probably heard the buzz phrase of learning in the flow of work. And there are ways that that can be done with or without technology. Actually, with technology, there's a lot of potential now in the space of embedded performance support systems. And that's the long way of saying, all right, I'm sitting there working in some sort of system and we can send a reminder to someone about something new. We could nudge them towards some activity that we think will add value to them. Of course, it could be intrusive if it became overwhelming and way too many of them, but we take the time to understand how people are using our systems and we look for those places where there's the best opportunity for learning truly in the flow of work. And that's the best example from a productivity standpoint where you don't need to actually step away from what you're doing whatsoever. That's something we're spending a lot of time focusing on and we're finding a lot of value in that space. We also know though, sometimes you need to take a little time to learn about something new. And think about the example of YouTube. And I don't know the exact stat, but I'm pretty certain that billions of YouTube videos are being watched every single day. I know quite a few in our household. Not all of those are about how to learn to do something new, but many of them are. So those short video snippets about how to, for example, change the outlets at your house. Now, maybe that should be left to an electrician, but I'm an example that I've done that before when I needed to change one out. And I watched this 5-minute video and I knew how to do it. So we're spending a lot of time building those types of micro learnings that are supported by technology, ideally as close to where they're working on a daily basis, if possible, the productivity tools that they use. So it's right there at their fingertips. And they can learn something new. But we also know that the best way to learn and deep skill development and change is in some of those programs. And I shared those examples previously of how I approach those programs. And we have programs designed to be able to support those experiences that use that flow of work, that use those self-paced videos, and then also use live venues where there's cohort and peer sharing. Find a lot of value from individuals sharing with others and helping each other through different scenarios. When I'm running sessions, I tend to rely more on the participants for the answer versus me being the expert. I may have some expertise in the topic, but they learn a lot more from those cohorts and peers. And we hear from participants time and time again. That's one of the best things that they like about learning is spending that time with others and learning from others. They build a sense of camaraderie as well, back to some of those examples I shared earlier, the connection piece, and we continue to do a lot of it. So that flow of work, self-paced, and then programs that have more of an end-to-end experience that build in some of those components I shared before.
And I think the peer sharing and, you know, you can call it sort of informal mentoring, that sort of thing is, it's a huge confidence builder too, right? For sort of both sides, because if you're giving feedback to somebody and you're getting positive feedback from somebody that you respect as a peer, it helps your confidence. Or if you're able to talk through with somebody your experience and what's worked for you, that develops confidence for you on that side. All that, there's a lot of examples of that sort of continuous loop that peer sharing and informal mentoring can provide to a group. It's really validating, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking of a person that was a recent program that lacked confidence in the early stages of the program and was getting some advice from others. By the end, that individual was giving advice to others and had built that confidence. So that, as you described, it's this force multiplier where they're maybe, oh, this is okay. And I can share this and I can bring this to the table. This is a safe group for me to learn. And then they start to gain more and more confidence and even push each other a little bit more as well, which is great to see.
Yeah. And it goes again back to that idea we talked earlier about the viewing it as a pyramid and part of the foundation of learning and ongoing development being confidence. And that can be dismissed sometimes. But again, it's that idea of if you don't have the confidence to do what you know you should do, then the nuts and bolts of the tactics aren't going to happen, or they're not going to happen well, because you don't have that sort of emotion behind what you're doing, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Part of learning also is self-improvement. And you talked about like your example of the YouTube video and changing an outlet or whatever it might be. There's opportunities for that every day and throughout the year. I'd love to get your perspectives and advice for listeners around. Everybody's got pretty limited time. Everybody's stretched thin in a lot of different directions. But what's your advice, especially in sales roles, obviously, should spend their limited time for self-development?
Absolutely. Thank you, Will. So I know that not everybody is a morning person, but I'll say I am a morning person. Every morning when I get up, I read. And I know I just shared the example of you need to have the application component. But also think about me making that decision first thing in the morning to read. I am reading, and it could still be on an electronic device, but I still like the physical books, is focused on helping me grow versus mindless scrolling. And I know our phones can pull us into that. And by the way, there's some great things you can learn on your phone as well. But make that commitment the first thing in the morning to spend some time, set aside some time focused on learning, reading, listening to a podcast, whatever the case might be, whatever the topic is that's interesting you, just start from day one. Because you know, at that point in time, you've already accomplished something that you've learned in that moment. And it could be as short as 10, 15 minutes. I like to spend a little bit more time on it, but I've been trying to, and giving credit to the James Clear book, Atomic Habits, there's habit stacking. Now, when I'm on the bike, which I'm on the stationary back bike this earlier this morning, I was reading a book on the value of learning while I was on the stationary bike. So I'm getting exercise at that point and I'm reading at the same point. So I'm learning something at that same point. The other thing is, as you think about feedback, I know there's a lot of frameworks on feedback. There's a lot of discussion about feedback. A lot of times I don't get a lot of feedback. So I'm not hearing what someone is thinking about the value of what I'm bringing to the table. But know that even if somebody doesn't give you direct feedback, their responses can be feedback in disguise. So even if you, at a minimum, you do something. So let's say I lead a training session, or maybe you're working with clients. Just take some time at the end and think about their responses. Think about how it went. And that is a form of self-reflection and feedback that helps you to get a sense for how you're doing. The other thing I just heard recently, and I've started to implement this a little bit more, Dr. Adam Grant, he's wrote a number of very popular books, and I think his latest one is called Hidden Potential. He said that when he was a diver in college, he knew at the end of each dive what his score was. So he had a clear sense of what his score was. And now, as he does a lot of speaking engagements and consulting, he will walk off the stage and say, "How did I do? Great, great. Fantastic. Thank you. Not so helpful." So instead, he actually asked them, rate what I just shared there, the value of what I share on a scale of 1 to 10. They'll give a response. Let's say the response is 9. Okay, what could I do to make it better? Now you're getting some actionable feedback, and we could even apply it here today. What's the value of what I've shared here today on a scale of 1 to 10? And if it's less than 10, what could I do to improve it? That sort of a scenario.
Those are great points that people can take to heart, that idea of something little in the morning, like you said, that you might spend 10 or 15 minutes on can be a great momentum builder for the rest of your day. And also that idea of everybody wants more feedback, right? And people can be frustrated sometimes for the lack of feedback they get. But part of what you're saying is like, hey, you've got to take responsibility for pulling out that feedback if you're not getting it, and asking for it in the right way versus like, how was that? And just getting the thumbs up and that was great. Like, no, let's talk a little bit more specifically. Like, what was it that was valuable, or what could be better than that sort of plus delta idea?
Absolutely. And you alluded to it at the beginning. I'm a firm believer that learning opportunities exist every single day. I am at the point in my life for the work that I do that I view my role in learning, coaching, and leadership as my calling. It's the reason I was put on this planet, which certainly helps from a motivation standpoint and mindset, as you described. I've been noticing, though, throughout my life, at the age I am now, I've missed many, 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 many opportunities to learn. But the good news is every single day presents a new opportunity to learn. And even so much so that I've incorporated into a daily nighttime routine. So that going to bed routine with my kids, I ask them two questions. And the questions are, what did you learn today? And what made you happy today? And there have been a small number of examples, a few here and there, where they didn't have something to say. The reality is, most of the time when the response was, I don't know, it was because they were so tired from yeah. all the things they learned and all the things that were moments of happiness. And I'm actually starting to, I used to write it down in a notebook, and that is helpful to an extent, but now I'm using an app where you can add it in and you can add some pictures in at the time. And I'm excited to look back at those things. I get sentimental about those types of things because I have some of those threads from my family, including my grandfather, who was in World War II, and he passed away about 14 years ago now, but he has a journal of everything that he experienced during World War II from 1942 to 1945. And this was on a paper journal, and I can actually see his writing at this point in time. We have different technology today, and I'm capturing it a little bit different way, and I'm asking a little different question, but there is an element of that reflection on what you've learned. And it's been a fun activity each night with my kids.
I actually have a journal like that from my father in Vietnam from October 67 to October 68 that he wrote in every single day. I still have that physical yes. journal. It's pretty fascinating to look at. But I think it's like a simple but such a fundamental thing, the idea of asking yourself those questions at the end of the day. It's great that you asked your kids that, but we can all ask ourselves that. What did I learn today? And what made me happy? Meaning what helped, and that sort of links to, were you fulfilled? That sort of values alignment thing. Am I sort of on the path I want to be on? And it doesn't have to be some great epiphany, but something every day that sort of like tells you that you're on the right path. It's an important thing to try to just reflect on at the end of every day. I think that's really good advice.
Thank you, Will.
Well, Jason, thank you. And I'm going to say that the value you brought was 10 out of 10 to this show. So I really appreciate you being here. I think these are great perspectives for the listeners, and your experience and expertise is really, really helpful. So thank you for sharing that. You can find and follow Jason Grom on LinkedIn. You can also learn more about Ameriprise Financial at ameriprise.com. I want to thank all of you for listening, of course. As always, please follow us on whatever your podcast platform of choice is where you might be listening to this. But you'll also find previous episodes, if you scroll back, that you might have missed. You'll find all of our episodes and other related content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Thank you, as always, for the feedback, the ratings, reviews that you give the show. We really appreciate it. Please continue to spread the word. Tell a friend or colleague or two or three about the show. And thanks, as always, for taking time out of your day, wherever and whenever you might be listening. And we look forward to having you join us next time. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed, and as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.